The following program may contain subject matter and language not suitable for all ages. If you are sensitive to true crime details or adult language, perhaps you might want to check out some of our other shows on the network, which are safe for all ages. So with viewer and listener discretion advised, let's get to the show.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More. My name is Nicole Mancha, and I am joined by my lovely co-host, Alex Mercado.
Buongiorno.
And we are joined by our other lovely co-host and wonderful producer, Mike Mercado.
Alex, how was that Rosetta Stone gift card I sent you?
Yeah, I never got it.
Just like the last few birthday presents I promised you.
Yeah, they're on the Amazon wish list, I feel like.
Well, good brother, something that isn't on the Amazon wish list is this episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More, because we are delivering it to the awesome people who join us here on your introduction podcast to the world of true crime, macabre, scary, horror, interesting, urban legends, and everything in between. And on today's episode, you two, everybody knows Stranger Things is one of the most popular shows on all of television.
Mm-hmm.
WandaVision has taken the pop culture world by storm. Well, there is one thing a lot of these shows and many, many, many other shows have in common: mind control. And on today's episode on Murder, Mysteries, and More, we're talking about MK Ultra. Good brother, what do you know about MK Ultra?
References. So obviously Winter Soldier, and like you just mentioned, WandaVision, and I guess Stranger Things. I couldn't get past the first season. I didn't like it that much. I'm that guy. But I also, so most of my facts are probably not really facts. So I'm kind of fascinated to hear the truth behind it.
Lovely Nicole Mancha.
Pretty much the same. A lot of like pop culture stuff, but not a whole lot besides that. Because conspiracy theory, like, which I think this kind of lays in the realm of a lot of time, is not really my thing. Like, if we're talking true crime, I want to know about like dead bodies in fields, because it's never a fucking mannequin.
Really good. Well, on today's episode, we got a little bit of dead bodies and conspiracy theories.
Wonderful.
It's going to be a wonderful one. But before we get into the gritty nitty details on this roller coaster ride, let's give some credit to my sources: history.com, NPR, the CIA's secret quest for mind control, torture, LSD, and a poisoner in chief. And of course, our favorites, Last Podcast on the Left. So for those of you who aren't sure about what we're talking about right now, before we get into it, MK Ultra was a top secret CIA project in which the agency conducted hundreds of experiments, sometimes on unwitting U.S. citizens, to assess the potential use of LSD and other drugs for mind control, information gathering, and psychological torture. If we're talking about the CIA, obviously we're talking about torture and doing these drugs, we gotta be in the 1950s. In the 1950s and in the 1960s, the height of the Cold War, the United States government feared that Soviet, Chinese, and North Korean agents were using mind control to brainwash U.S. prisoners of war in Korea. In response, Alan Dulles, director of the Central Intelligence Agency, approved Project MKUltra in 1953 under the supervision of agency chemist and poison expert Sidney Gottlieb. The covert operation aimed to develop techniques that could be used against Soviet bloc enemies to control human behavior with drugs and other psychological manipulators. The program involved more than 150 human experiments involving psychedelic drugs, paralytics, and electroshock therapy. Sometimes the test subjects knew they were participating in a study, but at other times, they had no idea, even when the hallucinogens started taking effect.
That's like my biggest nightmare, is to be under hallucinogens and not know that I'm under hallucinogens, because how does that mess with just your brain in general? It's one thing when you're taking something and you know you're taking it. So even if you're not prepared for what the outcome is going to be, you knew that you took it, opposed to like essentially being roofied.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought that up. It's one thing to, you know, purposely do something for a Blink-182 concert. And then it's a whole different thing to like get shocked by it and then still not know the outcome.
Right.
And know Blink-182.
And of course, there's nothing better than listening to all the small things when you're just tripping on LSD. So Gottlieb arranged for the CIA to pay $240,000 to buy the world's entire supply of LSD at the time. He brought this to the United States, and he began spreading around to hospitals, clinics, prisons, and other institutes, asking them through bogus foundations to carry out research projects and find out what LSD was, how people reacted to it, and how it might be able to be used as a tool for mind control. Most of these took place between 1953 and 1964, but it's not clear how many people were involved in the test. Journalist Stephen Kenzer, who spent several years investigating the program, calls the operation, quote, the most sustained search in history for techniques of mind control. Quote, Gottlieb wanted to create a way to seize control of people's minds, and he realized it was a two-part process. First, you had to blast away the existing mind. Second, you had to find a way to insert a new one into that resulting void. We didn't get too far on number two, but he did a lot of work on number one. Good brother, when you hear that, I mean, that's Zemo in real life. That's crazy stuff, right?
Mind is so fascinating because it's almost like the ocean where it's so deep yet so small. We should be able to know everything about it, but we never will.
Well, Nicole, when you hear that somebody is doing that, I mean, it sounds like James Bond, Mission Impossible stuff, but this was going on in the 1950s.
Yeah, and I also, when they say that, oh, well, we don't know, you know, how many people they really did this on, they absolutely do. They're full of shit. The government keeps records of records of records. And so, like, just because we can't find it doesn't mean somebody doesn't know. So that's my first thing. And the second thing is that's just a lot of subject testing that makes me very nervous for the effects, like the long lasting effects of certain things, especially a combination of things.
So MK Ultra, it wasn't just LSD. It also included experiments with MDMA, ecstasy, mescaline, heroin, barbiturates, methamphetamine, and psilocybin, which is magic mushrooms. Kinzer notes that the top secret nature of Gottlieb's work makes it impossible to measure the human cost of his experiments. Quote, we don't know how many people died, but a number did, and many lives were permanently destroyed.
That's like the scariest part of it, though. It's like there's so many lives that are affected, because we say this a lot, but when people pass away, like, it's not just the person who passes away whose life is affected. It's other people involved in their lives. And in this case, like, to have it be because of being a test subject, that just feels so upsetting.
This was kind of like the fun part of this journey, right? People taking LSD, maybe some mushrooms, hanging out. But there's a really dark side to all this, of course, when you're dealing with the CIA, especially in the 1950s.
Right.
Too many, the CIA mind control project, MKUltra, was essentially a continuation of work that began in Japanese and Nazi concentration camps. Not only was it roughly based on those experiments, but the CIA actually hired the vivisectionists and the torturers who had worked in Japan and in the Nazi concentration camps to come and explain what they had found out so that we can build on their research. Gottlieb and the CIA established secret detention centers throughout Europe and East Asia, particularly in Japan, Germany, and the Philippines, which were largely under American control in the period of the early 1950s. And therefore, Gottlieb didn't have to worry about any legal entanglements in these places.
That is, like, wild to me. Like, he specifically went where it's like when they say, oh, well, there's no FDA-approved things that need to be here, so we're going to go here. Like, that's so upsetting to me.
You think that's upsetting? Oh, CIA officers in Europe and Asia were capturing enemy agents and others who they felt might be suspected persons were otherwise what they called, quote, expendable. They would grab these people and throw them into cells and then test all kinds of, not just drug potions, but other techniques, like electroshock, extremes of temperature, sensory isolation, all in the meantime, bombarding them with questions, trying to see if they could break down resistance and find a way to destroy the human ego.
Think about that, like when they're talking about the sensory isolation, think about how crazy people were going in quarantine in the beginning. You know, it's like they were like, we weren't allowed to go see people. We weren't allowed to go do this. We weren't allowed to go do that. And it was like, you know, and at least then most people had at least one or two other people they could communicate with. And still people were so on edge. To be completely isolated, it feels like such a drastic measure that would absolutely make someone go insane.
And these projects designed not only to understand the human mind, but to figure out how to destroy it. Good brother, that is some evil main villain stuff.
And where do you think we learned it from? Like, what is this? Like you said, the 50s, it's the beginning of a lot of these agencies. You know, we took a lot of these German Nazi doctors and brought them to the U.S. and gave them sanctuary. And that's where you learn a lot of these very barbaric ways we were going about getting information or even messing with people's minds.
Well, good brother, it's interesting you say that because, for example, Nazi doctors had conducted extensive experiments with mescaline at the Dachau concentration camp. And the CIA was extremely interested in figuring out whether mescaline can be the key to mind control. That was one of their big avenues of investigation. So they hired the Nazi doctors who had been involved in that project to advise them. Another thing the Nazis provided was information about poison gases like sarin, which is still being used to this day. Nazi doctors came to America to Fort Detrick in Maryland, which was the center of this project, to lecture CIA officers to tell them how long it took for people to die from sarin.
I'm so upset right now. Like, I'm so upset right now.
Oh, like, this isn't anything new, like America working with its enemies. Like, this is nothing new. Like, that's how far back this is going. But this isn't the only way that MKUltra was used. There was something called Operation Midnight Climax, which was an MKUltra project in which government-employed sex workers lured unsuspecting men to CIA, quote, safe houses, where drug experiments took place. The CIA dosed the men with LSD, and then while at times drinking cocktails behind a two-way mirror, watching the drug take effects on the men's behavior. They even had recording devices installed in the rooms, disguised as electrical outlets. Most of the operation of Midnight Climax took place in San Francisco, Marin County, California, and in New York City. See, the program had little oversight, and the CIA agents involved admitted that a free-willing party-like atmosphere prevailed. An agent named George White wrote to Gottlieb in 1971, "Of course, I was a very minor missionary, actually a heretic, but I toiled wholeheartedly in the vineyards because it was fun, fun, fun. Where else could a red-blooded American boy lie, kill, and cheat, steal, deceive, rape, and pillage with the sanction and blessing of all the highest."
I mean, it's America, so pretty much anywhere.
Just the audacity of some people.
And that's what it goes when power isn't checked, when you can just kind of do whatever you want. And this is why I always feel the difference in coverage of war has changed so much, because it's so much more dirty. It's about information gathering. It's not just wars and troops on the ground. So you can't, you know, that's why it was such a big deal about Zero Dark Thirty. And when we learned about waterboarding and whatnot, it's like these techniques people used. And for us to see this, like, I think when people hear drug use, like, you hear what happened behind, how'd you get there? You have a bunch of boys. There wasn't any cancel culture. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a society that was looking out for the people. So can you imagine what these parties were like? What these sex workers must have had to deal with?
The crazy thing to me is that we were doing it to our own people, right? Like, yeah. The fact is that there's this kind of ideology in America that we're supposed to protect ourselves against everyone else. I'm like, we can't even protect ourselves from ourselves.
Very interesting you say that, Nicole, because there's somebody called Frank Olson. Frank Olson was a scientist who worked for the CIA. At a 1953 CIA retreat, Olson drank a cocktail that had been secretly spiked with LSD. A few days later, on November 28, 1953, Olson tumbled to his death from a window of a New York City hotel in an alleged suicide. The family of Frank Olson decided to have a second autopsy performed in 1994. They were moving the body closer to his wife. His family was doing it, so that's how they got in that scenario. A forensics team found injuries on the body that had likely occurred before the fall. The findings sparked conspiracy theories that Olson might have been assassinated by the CIA. After prolonged legal proceedings, Olson's family was awarded a settlement of $750,000. and received a personal apology from President Gerald Ford and then CIA Director William Kobe. And this is where I feel like when there's smoke, there's fire. They would not have settled. You wouldn't have gotten a letter, like, if this didn't happen. If there wasn't some, if they just didn't want to deal with this problem because we were going to have to find out information. And that's what we find out about these scenarios is there's a lot of information that ends up having to get out when you deal with legality. Good Brother?
Talk about on the Good Brothers with Judas and the Black Messiah with that case. You don't settle if you're innocent. You don't settle if you didn't do anything wrong. So
I do feel like, though, a lot of times the government will settle because they just don't want to deal with it. They don't want to bring more attention to things, especially the CIA does not want to bring more attention to themselves than necessary. It's the apology that really gets to me. It's like settling is one thing, but to then also send an apology about everything, that to me says that there was other things happening, but they just didn't want to drag out any more than necessary.
So let's take a quick detour because obviously this is the 50s and the 60s, which means there was some interesting times in society. Ken Kesey, author of the 1962 novel One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, volunteered for MKUltra experiments with LSD while he was a college student at Stanford University. Kesey later went on to promote the drug, hosting LSD-fueled parties that he called, quote, acid test. Acid test combined drug use with musical performances by bands, including the Grateful Dead, and psychedelic effects such as fluorescent paint and black lights. Some more notable people who reportedly volunteered for CIA-backed experiments with LSD included Robert Hunter, the Grateful Dead lyricist, Ted Kaczynski,
oh my God,
better known as the Unabomber, and James Joseph Whitey Bulger, the notorious Boston mobster. So you could say these parties influenced the early development of hippie culture and kickstarted the 1960s psychedelic drug scene, which was a direct adversary of the CIA. Good Brother, what do you think about this kind of pop culture impact when you hear how it all just kind of merged into the roots of what we cover here in 2021?
They almost created their enemy.
Exactly. And somebody like Jimi Hendrix, and like who people think he might have been a CIA operative, or he might have been the reason that he was assassinated. So I thought that was a little interesting thing to note right here. But like anything, all good things must come to an end, guys. Like mentioned earlier, Gottlieb operated almost completely without supervision. He had a sort of a checkoff from his titular boss and from his real boss, Richard Helms, and from the CIA director, Alan Dulles. Eventually, Helms would become the director himself. But none of them really wanted to know what he was doing. And that's the thing, right? What you know, when you know, how you knew it.
Yeah.
In 1974, New York Times journalist Seymour Hersh published a story about how the CIA had conducted non-consensual drug experiments and illegal spying operations on U.S. citizens. His report started the lengthy process of bringing long-suppressed details about MKUltra to light. The following year, President Ford, in the wake of the Watergate scandal, and amid growing distrust of the U.S. government, set up the United States President's Commission on CIA activities within the United States to investigate illegal CIA activities, including Project MKUltra and other experiments on unsuspecting citizens. The commission was led by Vice President Nelson Rockefeller and is commonly referred to as the Rockefeller Commission. This is where we kind of were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. When information gets out and it starts leaking little by little by little. That's the worst thing they can do. That's why they try to discredit journalists, especially back in those days when journalism was kind of put on its own pedestal.
Well, it's like the problem when they say, like, a secret's only a secret if the other two people you tell are dead. Like, a secret just cannot stay that way if other people know.
And Alex, obviously, you're a big fan, and we watched the movie with Robert Redford about Bernstein and Woodrow and Bernstein. So when you hear that, kind of like, when you've seen a dramatization of that, and then you hear, like, this actually happening, but this time it's the CIA, and it's during Watergate and whatnot, like, what do you kind of hear about that?
Pop culture sense, now you're starting to see movies about it. Adam Driver just did a great one. And like you said, Zero Dark Thirty is another good example, where now we're seeing it in film form, so it's moving with the times. Like you said, it used to be articles and then TV specials. And now we're getting full-length films that people, right or wrong or 100% accurate or not, are taking as 100%. So it's fascinating to see where that's going to go.
Like we all know with the United States government, once one committee or one thing is created, another must be, because there's money to be made and there's people to get revenge on. The Church Committee, helmed by Idaho Democrat Senator Frank Church, was a larger investigation into the abuse of the CIA, FBI, and other U.S. intelligence agencies during and after the resignation of President Richard M. Nixon. The Church Committee delved into plots to assassinate foreign leaders, including Cuban dictator Fidel Castro and Congolese independent leader Patrice Lumumba. It also uncovered thousands of documents related to MKUltra. These revelations resulted in Ford's 1976 executive order on intelligence activities that prohibited, quote, experimentation with drugs on human subjects except with the informed consent in writing and witness by a disinterested party of each such human subject. The fact that we even had to put that on paper is one thing, but wow. When you're dealing with, when you're dealing with litigation, you got to. The end of Gottlieb's career came in 1973 when Richard Helms, who was the then director of the CIA, was removed by President Nixon. Once Helms was gone, it was just a matter of time until Gottlieb would be gone. And most important was that Helms was really the only person at the CIA who had any idea of what Gottlieb had been doing. So, as they were both on their way out of the CIA, they agreed that they should destroy all records of MKUltra. Gottlieb drove out to the CIA Record Center and ordered the archives to destroy boxes full of MKUltra records.
Oh my God.
However, it turns out that there were some records found in other places. There was a depot for expense account reports that had not been destroyed, and various other pieces of paper remain. There was enough out there to reconstruct some of what he did, but his effort to wipe away his traces by destroying all those documents in the early 70s was quite successful. Ultimately, Gottlieb concluded that mind control was not possible. After MKUltra shot down, Gottlieb went on to lead a CIA program that created poisons and high-tech gadgets for spies to use. And that is our episode on MKUltra. Good brothers, any thoughts?
I love a happy ending.
Lovely, Nicole.
Well, it's like when you had mentioned earlier how they're like, well, we don't know. There was no like subjects. We didn't know how many there were. It's like, no, they did. It was just burned because like he clearly kept enough records to get his ass in trouble.
Good brother. I'll put your feet to the fire. Are they still doing things like this?
Yeah.
How bad do you think?
Imagine what we don't know. Imagine what did get burned. I mean, I would assume we know how to control people's minds to an extent, like as much as you humanly possibly could do that. Obviously, I think we know how to do that. And we hear it nowadays, even with like little slip ups now of off the books, off the record stuff that starts out that way.
Levin, Nicole, do you think that they've figured out techniques to control people's minds?
So, I mean, look at cults where there is brainwashing happening and like, you know, families where you've seen like these situations where the children all feel a certain way, whether or not that's true. So I do think that this is a way to maybe get the more differently minded people. So like a lot of times it's like the, you know, being broken, it takes a really long time to do it. So I think the key here was trying to do it in a quicker amount of time to be able to get people to do what you want them to do. So I do think it happens, but I think that they've had to introduce additional techniques.
So you don't think there's just one pill or shot that gives them...
No, I don't, because I look at like the Manson family and how they were all kind of, it took a while for them to be brought in.
But they were all doing LSD and they're all.
So it helps. Yeah. But that's why I'm saying there were other techniques. Like Charles Manson was super charismatic. He had a way about him. So I think that there are other techniques that need to come in that aren't just drug related.
This has always been kind of, as we've done this show and we all are true crime podcast nuts and whatnot. But I actually believe more and more that Charles Manson wasn't charming. and that he wasn't charismatic. It's just that when you're on so many drugs and you're so naive because he was a pedophile, that it all just equals into that. But I don't actually think he was this charismatic Joel Osteen type of guy. Like, I don't think he can have an entire congregation and sell out the Toyota Center. I think he was somebody who was a dirty hippie who had LSD and had a bunch of the 15-year-olds. Good brother, what do you think about that?
I do think he had some sort of, we can call it what it is, an energy or sorts. But there were times they were without drugs, and he was still leading a big number, if we're talking about Charlie Manson, where I think you have to say something about that. You can't do it off one alone. It's almost like a cocktail of sorts.
Yes.
Like drugs mixed with this energy, mixed with the time period, too. Mm. Obviously, it's a lot different. Like you mentioned, Joe Osmond, we see him as the modern-day kind of thrifter compared to this. It was a different time, the hippie movement, Catch Fire at the right time. That's more of the situation we're discussing.
I think they've done enough research at this point, though, into other cults. Like that one, the show that you watched, Clark Kent, years ago. You know what I'm talking about.
Smallville.
Thank you. That girl who was in that sex cult.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's like, and that's more common. Like that's more modern, you know, where like they have been involved. Scientology has been claimed to be a cult for years. So it's like, there is this thing that can happen. And I think once you figure out the combination of drugs plus charisma plus this plus that, like you're able to make something that can convince people to do what you want. However, I think they want it to be done ASAP.
And finally, how funny is it that they used it, they abused it, and they took advantage of it, and now it is one of the most illegal things
yep.
on the ban list, but it's also now becoming something that cancer patients use and people with PTSD and microdosing, and it's really mm-hmm. becoming something. Good brother, what do you think about kind of that way that it's kind of
new
come
AG.
Full circle? Yeah, and it's come full circle.
I like to think of it like pop culture with Thor's hammer. It can be used as a tool or it can be used as a weapon.
That's a good analogy. It's very true. And have we seen when Thor's hammer is being used by somebody good or somebody bad? It's a very deadly thing. Let me, Nicole, what you think of that thought, though?
I think that pretty much with Alex, like it's good or bad. It, you know, people use and abuse substances no matter what they are, legal or illegal. So I feel like in general, there needs to be some sort of understanding that no matter what you do, too much of anything is not a good thing.
Good brother, before we let you go, any final thoughts for your people here on this edition of Murder Mysteries and More, our introduction to the world of MKUltra?
The end.
Let me know, Nicole, any final thoughts?
No, I think this is kind of interesting because, like I said, I didn't know a whole lot about it, but I do think it's always interesting when we start talking about mind control, brainwash, that kind of thing, because it is really interesting how the human mind just kind of functions.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this edition of Murder, Mysteries, and More, your introduction podcast to the world of true crime, scary, macabre, interesting, urban legend, spooky, and everything in between. Make sure you're following us all over the universe, the Good Brothers on Twitter, at Mercado21Alex, and then Instagram, Mercado21. Check out his pop culture show, The Good Brothers, on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod. The lovely Nicole Manchas on Instagram and on Twitter at Typing When Tipsy. Check out the Gone Missing podcast, our sister podcast that she does with Alyssa, spotlighting missing person cases that fell through the cracks on mainstream media. Check them out all over the universe. They're on Twitter at The Gone Missing Pod. They're on Instagram at Gone Missing Pod. And make sure you like, rate, review, and share us wherever you get your favorite podcast at The Gone Missing Podcast. I'm on Twitter at Mike at Media. Instagram, Mike Mercado Media. I have a sports show, Sports from the Couch. Come talk sports with us. Is your favorite team good? Is it really bad? Check us out on Twitter at Couch Sports Talk. Like, rate, review, and share us wherever you get your favorite podcast at Mercado Airwaves. Patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. Alex has horrible habits. You can support him by visiting us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. And if you don't want to support him that way, go to teespring.com/Mercado Airwaves. Guys, he's sad and he needs all the help he can get. So visit us, teespring.com/Mercado Airwaves. Like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves, youtube.com/Mercado Airwaves Network, facebook.com/Mercado Airwaves, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network, and keep up to date with the Gone Missing Podcast, The Good Brothers, Sportsman Couch, or interviews with athletes and celebrities at twitter.com/Mercado Airwaves. For the good brother himself, Alex Mercado, for the lovely Nicole Mancha, I'm Mike Mercado. We will see you next time here on Murder, Mysteries, and More.